Boxers. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Phil Palucha from Billionaires in Boxers. Welcome to this latest edition of the TV show, podcast, radio, wherever it is that you are enjoying this content, you are very welcome. I am joined today by a good friend and client of mine, Sebastian. I've been looking forward to getting this guy on the show. As soon as I met him, I knew I had to introduce him to you. The way this man's brain works is a wonder to behold. So, Sebastian, welcome to the show.
Hey, Phil, thanks for these wonderful words and great that I can be your guest.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So for those people who haven't come across you before, why don't you give us a bit of a flavor for who you are, what you do, who do you help?
Sure. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur for over 25 years now. I actually have never been employed. I run a treasury consultancy for 22 years. And now I work as a business angel investor and invest in tech startups. And also mentor CEOs of fast-growing tech startups.
I love that. So it's funny, actually. My definition of an entrepreneur is someone who's unemployable. So you are a great example of that.
I wouldn't hire myself, though.
Do you know what? It's really funny. I was having this very conversation with somebody the other day, and very short version because I won't name them. Somebody offered me a job, and I kept saying, thank you, I'm flattered, but I don't want a job. I'm really happy where I am. Yeah. And eventually they came back and they said, what would we need to do to get you to leave your company and come and work for us? And I said, well, point number one, that would never happen. And point number two, there is nobody in the world crazy enough to pay me what I pay myself. Like, no company in the world would ever be prepared to do that. So,
and there's probably no company would like to have you as an employee, you know?
No.
Same as I, you know? I wouldn't hire myself. Yeah?
It's well, you're going to need to give me a seven, almost eight-figure salary. I'm going to work 2.5 days a week. I'm going to sleep when I want, watch football when I want, and rarely turn up for meetings. If you want that person, let's talk about it.
I actually was asked by a friend when I started to be an entrepreneur. He asked me, hey, Sebastian, when are you going to have a real job?
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought, what do you mean by a real job? Mm. Yeah, a job where you work for a company, you get a salary, you start at 9, you finish at whatever. And I said, oh, I think this will never happen.
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? When I first left, so I left the corporate world. I did work in the corporate world for a bit before I became an entrepreneur. And when I left, everybody kept talking to me about the risk. Like, isn't this a big risk? Mm. Like, you're leaving behind a guaranteed salary. I was on a really decent package. And they were like, you're leaving behind the car and the pension. And like, isn't that risky? And I don't know whether my brain's just wired differently, but the whole time I kept thinking, if this company goes bust, like, I have no job. And not only do I have no job, there are going to be 5,000 people who all live in my local area now looking for a job.
Yeah.
Right? And that seems like risk to me, because not only is that happening, I have no control over whether this company goes bust. Whereas in my own company, if I need another client, I just get another client. If I want to win another contract, I just win another contract. So actually, this feels like the least risky of all of those options.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this concept of a lifelong job is gone for decades now.
It doesn't exist anymore. No. In fact, somebody explained this really well. We'll touch on this. And then I want to ask you about your work in tech in particular, because tech is an industry that's very close to my heart, but they do some very quirky and funny things. So I want to talk about that. But somebody was talking about actually to do with tech, and they were saying, we're trying to make sure that we retain our employees. And everybody leaves after about a year or two. So what we want to do is we want to offer them a bonus, but they're only eligible for the bonus once they've been here for 3 years. And the guy says, it's not going to work. And he says, why not? And he says, well, let me explain to you why. He said, we've been through three revolutions, right? The first revolution was the Industrial Revolution. That was the revolution of, let's say, even as much as our grandparents, right? And that was about living. It was, you had to work to live. So even if your boss was absolutely awful to you, you still turned up every day and did your job, because without it, you wouldn't have food, you wouldn't have a place to live, you would die. So it was about working to survive. Well, then their children came around, and this is the revolution of information. And during the revolution of information, people realized that they could go to university and learn a skill, and that would allow them to get a higher qualified, higher paying job. And now it was no longer about working to survive. It was about standard of living. It was about getting the house, the mortgage, the car. But then you still couldn't leave your job even if you didn't like it, because now you've got a mortgage to pay, and you're in debt up to the hilt for the car and the house and the 2.3 holidays a year or whatever it is, and that's your life. And then the younger generation have turned up, And now we're in the information of freedom, because now all of this information is readily available. So a great example, you know, our parents, maybe even our generation, we would have gone to university and learned technology and learned coding, and that would have entitled to us to get a good job. Well, now you can learn coding off YouTube completely for free.
Yeah.
You know, you can. I was listening to a guy, completely different sector, saying that he's added $100,000 worth of value onto his real estate portfolio because he's been following YouTube videos on how to do the work in the house himself and just following it along step by step. This is phenomenal. So we know
everything is available.
Everything is available. Yeah. So what they're saying is you're trying to maintain and keep employees in your business that aren't interested in working to survive. They're not even interested in working to get the mortgage. They're working because it's something that excites them, and there's a passion and there's a purpose. Yeah. And if you're not speaking to that, they will just leave and go somewhere that is. So it's not about, and which is why that bonus idea would never work, because it's this idea of, well, you know, we give you this bonus and then we bring in a mortgage broker who's going to help you get a mortgage. And the younger generation's going, oh no, our parents fell for that trap. We don't want to do that. We're not going that way.
I mean, people leave. I mean, you see this in US at the moment with this big resignation. Yeah?
Resignation.
People just leave their jobs. And then, I mean, look at what Musk did, you know, just last week. You know, I mean, first he fired half of his company.
Yeah.
And then he sent an email out saying, hey, you know, you're going to have to work extra hard. And I only want hardcore coders in my team. And please sign this pledge that you fully accept no spare time, no freedom, only be there for the company. And from this, I don't know, 6,000 people were still there, 1.5 left. Yeah. I mean, just by one email. Yeah. I mean, this shows exactly what you said. You know, they want a purpose. They're not working for a living.
No, exactly. And I feel like there's a real divide between the owners of the tech firms and the people who work for them. Because often the owners of these tech firms, not always, but often they are of a different generation to a lot of the people that are working for them. So they're trying to manage them and work with them in their business as they would like to have been managed 10, 15, 20 years ago. And that's always going to cause a headache, right?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, they expect from them the same attention and the same workload they are prepared to give, you know? And I mean, hey, they are the owners, you know, and they only are employees. Yeah? Mm. So they have to accept that this is a different game.
No, I like that.
And what you said, I mean, many of them are a different generation and I'm also Generation X, you know, so I grew up differently. Yeah? But we have to accept that people, the younger generation, they have different goals, they have a different purpose in life. And if you want to keep them in the organization, we have to accept this and we have to give them what they want, you know, otherwise they leave. Yeah? That's just reality.
I love that. So I have two young children and they're really young actually, but my oldest one's just starting to use iMessaging and things with her cousins and her friends, and they always know where each other are.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to my wife, like, the only way I knew where my friends were was I would cycle around the neighborhood and look for all where the bikes were outside someone's house and knock on people's door and be like, do you know where everyone is? Oh, they're down the back field. And it's like, well, I live in the countryside, so that's not really much help. like everywhere's a field.
When I grew up, I mean, I grew up in East Germany, you know, and we didn't even have a phone at home. Yeah?
Right.
So we couldn't call each other. Yeah. So I literally have to go out and knock on the door and say, hey, Phil, you're coming out to play. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, those days are gone, right? They all just jump on a team chat thing now. And listen, and that's fantastic. I absolutely love that. But again, you can understand why, if to use that parenting analogy, if we were to say to our kids, just go around to their house and knock on and see where they are, they'd look at you like you were crazy. They'd be like, why don't I just text them? Right? Like, I've got my phone right here. It's like, do you want to go on a bike ride? It's like, what, like a virtual one? Or it's like, no, a real one.
On Zoom?
Like a real one. It's like, why would I do that? It's like, oh, love of God.
Crazy.
Like I could do it downstairs. It's warmer.
Yeah.
I don't need to go out.
Exactly. But the same what happens between our kids, you know, we have to, when we have young employees, we have to sort of adapt and we have to accept that they are different, yeah?
Mm.
And which is good. So
no,
and this is what we do as one part of our work, you know. We help CEOs of fast-growing tech companies to build this high performance team with younger generations primarily, no? And then on top of that, also virtual people, because when you hire someone, it's unlikely that they live around next door in your village, you know. They maybe live in a different city or in a different country or on a different continent. So this is reality.
But I like that, but it also poses different challenges, doesn't it? Because I never understood the idea of hiring the best person for the job who lives within 1 hour's drive of your office, right? Because there's a whole big wide world out there. Whereas now we're hiring the best person for the job, no matter where they are.
Exactly.
But that requires different levels of management, because you're not seeing them in the coffee room. You're not seeing when they're getting stressed and being able to go and, you know, help them and take them for lunch or whatever it would be, or give them that incentive or make somebody a coffee. Like I remember whenever I could always tell when I looked stressed in my last corporate job, because our CEO would make me a coffee. Like that was how I knew. Like he'd just go and put it on the table, like squeeze my shoulders and walk off. And that was my code for Phil looks stressed.
Calm down.
Yeah, exactly. Just calm down a bit. But that doesn't exist when you're at home. No, you have no idea what's going on. We've all got things that happen at home, right? It was always very difficult to leave your personal life at the office door. But it's even harder now because you're at home. You are still in the environment where these things are happening, either in a positive distraction or a negative distraction. So it must be a real minefield for management.
Yes, I mean, it's not so difficult. Yeah, you just have to be more purposeful. Yeah, you have to. I mean, as you said, meetings in a coffee. In the kitchen doesn't happen anymore. Yeah?
No.
So you have to schedule these meetings. You know, you have to put this in the calendar. Say, hey, let's have a coffee tomorrow.
Mm. Yeah?
Or what we do, I mean, I have a virtual team with people in the Philippines and in different parts of Germany and then sometimes in US. We schedule a Friday evening or late afternoon wine hour or beer hour, you know?
Nice.
I mean, in the past, I mean, people I had here in the office, about 20 employees, so we gathered in the kitchen on a Friday afternoon and opened a bottle of wine, had a chat. But hey, this doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah? No.
So now we schedule this and we do this via Teams or Zoom. Huh?
That's cool.
And it's also important to really check in with people. Yeah, to understand how they're feeling, what's happening in their family, are they okay? Is there something which because they are far away, you know, sometimes they are on their own. And you have to build up a rapport and you have to build up a connection with these people.
I like that a lot. Actually, some of my team started to do this this thing that they call the accountability session, but it was originally about like holding each other accountable for certain tasks and things. Now it's that they just leave Zoom on in the background whilst they're working so that they can continue to kind of have a conversation, just like we did in the office where
it's
our computers
nice.
Were
exactly.
back to back and you would talk to the person whilst you were doing your job.
I also do it sometimes with the team, because it gives you the feeling that you're not alone. You can exchange. You can also say, hey, Phil, how about this? You know, you can ask his questions and have a conversation going.
Do you know what's really funny? So the last corporate place I worked, because it was based around real estate and financial services, we weren't allowed our personal cell phones. Like we just weren't allowed to use them. You had to lock them away and that was that. So the idea of doing anything on WhatsApp at all was just a complete taboo. I mean, like you get fired for doing that. Whereas now I think about 80% of our business is ran on WhatsApp.
Yes,
just people audio noting each other, sending documents. It's like if WhatsApp ever goes down, I'm going to be in real trouble. But I find that fascinating, even how much that has evolved as a process. It's gone from, no, that's social media. You're not allowed to incorporate that to actually social media is absolutely integral to part of what you're doing as a business.
Yeah.
I want to ask you this though, because this is one of the bugbears that I have with tech, and I know this is something that you've come across a lot, is that the owners of these tech companies don't just have difficulty communicating with their teams and their employees and trying to create that purpose. It's also, it's like they speak a different language when it comes time to getting investors and sales. They're speaking tech and the other people are speaking investment or business, and those are not the same language.
Yeah. Or say it in other words, they don't speak English. No.
They don't speak English, they speak tech. Exactly.
Yeah. And I see this so often, you know, and I can understand where they get it coming from, because I also have a tech background, you know. I know how they think, and it's also not bad. I don't want to value this, you know. It's just that they need to do a little mindset shift. You know, they are very singular focused on their technology, on their programming languages, whatever they use to build these tools. But the rest of the world, which is probably, I don't know, 95%, they don't understand this, you know? They don't understand JSON or whatever library or... I literally come from a mentoring call with one of my clients, yeah? And they just got on, we just onboarded them last week, and they said, yeah, you know, we're looking for clients. And I said, okay, what do you do? Yeah, we know we can do everything. I said, okay, what industry are you working for? Yeah, we can serve every industry, no problem. And look at all this technology we master, you know? And then they have this flyer where they put all the different technology. You never heard of them, you know, on this flyer. Yeah? And I said, okay, listen, guys, if you have a back problem, yeah, do you go to a doctor who also fixes your teeth and can check your eyes? Or do you go to a specialist who's really good in fixing your back?
It's a good analogy.
And I said, yeah, I would probably go to the doctor who fixes my back, you know? And then I said, do you care what kind of technology this doctor is using? What kind of tools or systems? No, I just want my back fixed. Good point. Yeah. So whenever you have a client who wants a web application developed, yeah, as a maybe to serve some business customers, do they care what language you use? Mm. Do they care what and do they go to you because you can serve every industry? Or do they go to you because you said, yeah, I'm very good in web app and especially for fintech, and then you narrow it down, you know?
It's clever. No, you're so right. I tell you what's interesting about this is that you often hear people say that you've got to niche down, right?
Yeah.
That you've got to serve a target market. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think, but it does have to be one of two things. You either have to serve a target market or solve a target problem.
Exactly.
What you can't do is be, well, we can help anybody with anything at any time, because then no one's going to buy from you. And what's funny is when you speak to businesses like that, they see this as, well, we can work with anybody. That gives us endless possibilities to earn loads of money. And I look at that and go, you've got lots of opportunity to make no money because everyone's looking at you as the jack of all trades. And here's the biggest problem I often find, and I found this particularly when I worked in tech, was they will do a presentation or put something together and it's very tech heavy. It's the languages that they use. It's the coding. Mm. It's a little bit about the background and how they've migrated to this new system and why and all this kind of stuff. And they're talking about the functionality. They're talking about what it is they actually do, right? And what the client or investor is trying to buy is the impact and the transformational impact that it's going to have on them.
Yeah.
And that's rarely discussed. No. It's like, well, we'll come in, we'll do this with the data, we'll clean it up, we'll throw up this machine learning software. It's going to take about 6 months. It's going to cost this much money. It's going to be amazing. We're going to do this system, produce it on here. It's going to feed with this CRM. Doesn't that sound great? And the client sat there going, I have no idea how that helps me. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
And the same they do with investors.
Yeah. Yep.
So in investment, I'm a business angel. I invest in early stage startups. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when they have a certain valuation, then business angel like me, we don't invest in those companies anymore because, I mean, this is then more like a job for venture capitalists, you know. Because they can write larger tickets, you know. I can't invest millions. but what they do, you know, they go to the market and say, yeah, I have a client who they have a valuation of 14, 15 million. And they went out for an investment and they opened for everyone, you know. Mm. We take business angels, we take VCs, you know. And I said, hey, listen, they want 3 million, yeah? So normally a business angel invests about 50 to 100K. Yeah. So you can imagine how many people you need to fill this million, yeah? So you end up with 30, 40 people on your cap table, which will drive every venture capitalist away, you know, because they don't want to deal with 30 business angels. Yeah?
No.
You have to be focused also when you're looking for funding. You have to focus on the right investors, either the small ones. So you have to talk to the small ones and give them what they want. They not only want to give you money, they also want to help you. Mm. Or you focus on the big boys, you know, on the VCs, but then you don't take money from the small ones.
Do you think that is a greed thing or a lack of awareness thing?
I think it's a lack of awareness.
Yeah, I was always curious about this. Is it just that, well, we'll just take money from anybody and everybody because that's what we want? Or is it that they don't really understand why they need to niche down, just like they do with customers?
Exactly, it's the same understanding.
They don't understand why they need
to get clear. They think there's an endless pool and whatever we get, we take.
Mm.
But this is wrong because if you open for everybody, you open for no one, you know?
Yeah. Well, and also knowing a lot of people as I do in that sort of VC private equity space, they like to, how do I word this nicely without upsetting anybody? They like to know about things before anybody else. They kind of, they like the thrill of the chase and feeling like they've won something. Like nobody else has identified this yet. They're in there early. They get to get their hands on it. They mold it. They help it. They invest. They get to use their connections. And it's like a game, right? It's like, haha, nobody else knew about this secret route. And I found the way forward. This is great, right? It's like a shortcut. It's like, oh, nobody else knows this way. I get home an hour quicker than everybody else. This is brilliant. What they don't want is everybody else to have already had their fingerprints all over it. So actually, the more people that you've had that conversation with, the less you are actually attractive to the right VC or private equity firm.
Yeah. And you have to stay focused on the client side, but also on the investor side. And this is what we helped them to do, you know. I mean, and this is, I think we have a similar problem, yeah, because I know what you're trying to, where you're trying to help your customers, yeah, and I try to help them building high-performance teams and really building a great organization. But in the end, we start with messaging, with positioning, with focus, sales, marketing and sales. Yeah.
You're so right. So as a business consultancy, I love spending my time on helping people go from unknown to unrivaled. It's our tagline, right? So helping them get on the right stages, the big platforms, get them to the cool kids table. But 90% of our time is spent dealing with, we need more sales, we need more investment, we need more leads, we need more messaging. Yeah. To the point where the thing that we're now ranked number one in the world for is the lead generation piece. This isn't even the piece I wanted to do, right? It was just like, we have to do this bit because that's what everybody wants. And I feel it's very similar with you, which is your superpower is really on looking at what's going on with the teams, helping them to improve, helping them to bring that all together so that the business can perform and achieve better results with better management structures, better team structures, retaining the best employees, attracting the best people. But every conversation that you have with a tech business in that space is usually about, we need more clients or we need more investment.
But I'm happy to help them, you know. I mean, it's
well, and you're good at it as well. But isn't it funny that we both have this thing that we're like, we really want to get to here, but the vast majority of our market saying we want to get there too, but we've just got to solve these problems first. And it's like, okay, we'll help you solve those problems because we're good at that. But then promise me we can go over there, right? It's kind of like when you like negotiating with my child. It's like, okay, eat the vegetables and then you can have the steak, right? I'm having to negotiate. I'm like, I want the steak too, but I'm going to have to eat the broccoli first. Come on. So I'm completely with you with that. So how is this working then in terms of your, I know this is relatively, I wouldn't say new, but it's a new structure for you in terms of being able to deliver this en masse. So if there are tech businesses and business owners that are listening to this going, actually, I agree with what Sebastian's saying. I would like to get to that point and talk about the teams, but right now I am in that place as well. I need more sales. I need more clients. I need more investment. Yeah. How should they get in touch with you and what is it that you're likely to do for them?
Yeah, I mean, we have a clear defined progress. And I mean, in touch, you can get with me on LinkedIn. That's the easiest way. I'm quite active there. And then we have a conversation. You know, we learn from it. Each other and understand what the problem really is, you know, and then we have a clearly defined process where we get them normally in a 3-month assignment and really nail down the issues and work every month on a certain topic, which basically builds up on each other. And this is a simple but very powerful process.
Yeah, I like that. And I like the fact it's 3 months as well, because I feel like a lot of people, when you start talking about 12, 24-month engagements, they panic because it's the first time they've met you. Whereas coming in and saying, actually, I just need help with this project. I'm currently going through a round of investment. I need to maximize that. I don't think we're going to hit target.
Focused. And
yeah, we need a boost of new clients for the new year. What does that look like? Having that three-month period where you can guide them through that and then kind of show what that's all about. I think that's really powerful.
And you know, I mean, I also want to have fun with this client, you know? I mean, sometimes you end up in a relationship where you're saying, I'm not sure. And then you have to serve him for a year. So it's a two-way thing, you know, which is good.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think that's definitely something that we do within our business, as you know, is, you know, we work with people for 3 or 4 months initially. And a large part of that process is, yes, to get that person comfortable and get them some quick results. But it's also that we can assess them, because if that person is really hard to work with, or I meet them, you know, for the next session and they've still not implemented the stuff in the first session.
Yeah.
Why on earth would I volunteer to work with this person for the next 12 months? I don't want to drag them. I don't want to carry them.
We only have one life to live. Yeah.
And, correct.
We have to make the best out of it, you know, on both sides.
Do you know what's really interesting as well? I think is that it's not just tech people not being able to speak English. It's the fact that different markets behave in different ways. So I had a client that was a fintech bank, and they were really successful in Asia, and they were moving over from Singapore and Malaysia to the US. Mm. And when they moved, they had no success. They were really struggling. In fact, they were pretty close to leaving the US market again because they just couldn't get it to work. I'm not saying I'm a genius by any stretch of imagination, but within 10 minutes of looking at what they were doing, I could see exactly what the problem was, which was when they were selling their services to Asia, it was all about the technical specification. It was about how quick the transactions were, what devices you could use it on, what the security protocol was, how many DevSec people they have in the business and what they're doing. It was all the numbers, right? Whereas in the US, they want the transformational impact. They want to know their money's safe. They want to know what it's going to do and what it's going to do, what it's going to feel like for them. And somebody that I know very well used the iPhone as an example. And they said a few years ago when the iPhone was first coming out, it was like the 3GS or whatever it was. If you look at the two advertising campaigns side by side, they're fascinating because the advertising campaign in the US was somebody listening to music, talking to their friends, having fun. And then there was a little bit of small writing at the bottom that told you about the processing chips and the battery life and all this kind of stuff. Whereas in Asia, it's the complete opposite. It was this little small picture of the phone. And like a giant list of technical spec. This battery life, this lithium thing made here, this chip from here. This is what it can do. This is how many songs it can hold. This is how many messages it can send. And it was just the technical specification. So if you take those, and that's an extreme, but if you take those two adverts side by side, you would never sell that phone to the Asian market using the American campaign, just as you will never sell to the Americans just selling them spec. They're not going to want that.
But you know what is also fascinating? The difference between the US and Europe, in the US, people are very transactional.
Yeah.
In Europe, people are very relationship focused. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I always fascinated how fast the Americans can close deals. Yes. Here in Europe, it takes us months, you know, build up a relationship and so on. But once we have the relationship, then it's a long-lasting relationship.
Correct.
In the US, I mean, I was part of a program, marketing mentoring program. And they really tried hard and they did a fantastic job closing us.
Right. Yeah?
They delivered a lot of good content. Fascinating. But there was no customer relationship management.
Right.
And then listen, you know, and then I knew that the time was up, you know, 6 or 9 months. And then suddenly I wanted to log in into their system. I said, okay, access doesn't work. What's that? Tried to go to the Facebook group to chat with some people. I wasn't part of the Facebook group anymore. Yeah?
You've been kicked out.
Interesting. Wow. And then I looked through my emails, and normally these emails are newsletter emails, you know, typical marketing emails. And I mean, I have tons of emails and I have a system which sorts them into different folders and stuff. So I never look at them. Yeah.
Sure.
But then I put in this name of this company in my email system. And then I saw all these emails. Well, I saw an email, hey, Sebastian, your time with us is coming to an end in a month. Just to let you know. Two weeks later, hey, Sebastian, you want to schedule an appointment with our salesperson to talk about renewal? And then on the last day, hey, Sebastian, your time is over. Thank you so much. And please leave a review here. Bye-bye. And I thought, this can't be true, you know. They automatically kicked me out of the program. No one talked to me. No one picked up the phone, you know. I mean, I didn't respond to their automated emails. Hey, there are 10 other channels you can contact me, you know.
It's terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah, and this was a 15K program, you know, so nothing cheap. Yeah,
I'll tell you a funny story actually just on that. So I have, and maybe this is the opposite of this. So shout out to a guy called Alex Sanfilippo who owns Podmatch. He owns Podpros as well, but he owns Podmatch, great platform. If you're not on Podmatch, you should go check it out. It's podmatch.com. It's brilliant.
/Phyllis, your affiliate link.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Tell them I sent you. I will genuinely put my affiliate link in the chat below. So you can go see the details there. But they have this mastermind group, and he knows I'm terrible with my email. So to date, I have, I'll tell you exactly, hang on. To this moment, I have 19,643 unread emails. So people that know me well know there's no point emailing me. And unless you're going to message me and say, hey, Phil, I've sent you an email, which usually happens on WhatsApp, then I check it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to look, right? Yeah. I will find it by accident. So what he does is he's got a mailing list for everything that's happening inside his mastermind and inside his group and everything else. And he WhatsApps me, and every WhatsApp starts with, because you don't read your emails, here is the message. And
yeah, this is customer service.
Correct. So anytime I'm in a session with them tomorrow afternoon that they've been emailing about for 3 weeks, I didn't know. He's WhatsApped it to me. Now it's straight on my calendar, and there we go. We can now get it done. So that is the opposite of your experience. I'm having a good customer experience because he's realized, actually, Phil doesn't check that. He's a WhatsApp guy. If I message him on WhatsApp, I'm going to get to him within the hour. If I send him an email, I might not reach him this year. Mm. But they took the time to learn that. Now, by the sounds of things, if this marketing mastermind that you were in had taken the time to learn how you like to be communicated with and had sent you a WhatsApp message, maybe a Facebook message to say, hey, did you see the WhatsApp message I sent you? Yeah. You'd probably still be inside that community right now.
Exactly. I will still be a client, you know, and maybe I even would have recommended. But I mean, now I talked to the CEO, and now I help them redefining this process, which is also good.
So now they've become a client, exactly.
Now they become a client. Yeah.
Well, they should, because it sounds like they needed it. Yeah. But again, this is where I think a lot of people are making these mistakes, right? It's not just the fact that they're speaking tech and not English. It's the fact that and it is difficult. As a business owner, I understand this too. It's very difficult to put yourself in the shoes of your customer. I'm doing a really interesting exercise at the moment where I'm working with somebody, an absolute genius, actually, when it comes to Google. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, so kind of SEO, but more about kind of what Google knows about you and what sources it needs to learn from and all that kind of great stuff. And the most interesting part of that challenge was at the very beginning where he says, what do you want Google to know about you? Now send people who don't know you to go and research you on Google and come back and tell you what you do. And the discrepancy between the two was absolutely fascinating. But how many businesses have that issue? How many businesses, like that one there, they did not want to lose you as a customer. They did not want to turn away your potential referrals, but they didn't have a mechanism and a system in place to understand this is how this person wants to be spoken to. This is how they want to communicate. This is how we reward that person. And if they did, I mean, if every customer that they won was referring 2 to 5 new customers,
look
at the
amazing
size of the business growth. It's incredible.
Yes.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
And it doesn't cost you anything.
No, absolutely. And in fact, it means that you're, I mean, this is certainly the way that I looked at it, was that it meant that I could now spend more on customer acquisition, but also on the time that I invest into that customer and giving them more, because I know that that person's turning into 2 to 5 referrals. So instead of thinking, well, this person is worth X to me, so I'm going to give them, you know, value, enough time, but I don't want to give them more than that time because they've not paid for that. No, if somebody needs some more support from me, I'm going to jump on a call and give as much as I can, because I know that I'm going to be rewarded through those 2 to 5 introductions that I then didn't have to pay for. And it was just business that just almost turned up organically. And that's a real joy.
Exactly.
No, I like that a lot. Sebastian, I think I think every tech business that's going through an investment phase or needs more customers should speak to you. You mentioned your LinkedIn earlier. For those of you who are listening to the podcast, watching this on LinkedIn Live, checking this out on any of the streaming channels, make sure you go and check out Sebastian's links below there in the chat. For those of you that are watching this on TV, you're going to need to make your way to LinkedIn and search for Sebastian's name. You can see it on the screen.
Or now, just go to my website, sebastianschieke.com, which is S-C-H-I-E-K-E. So very easy.
Absolutely perfect. So people can get in touch with you there. I've really enjoyed this. We should do this again.
Me too. Yeah, more than next time you come on my show, all right?
That sounds good. I will do that. And what we'll do, maybe we should start a series about teaching tech people English. It's like the teach English as a foreign language thing. We'll just aim it at tech people.
And I mean, it's no disrespect, really. I mean, this is not, I mean, I've been there. I done it, got a t-shirt. We just want to help, yeah? Because yeah, there's such a big world out there which needs your solutions, you know, which needs your technical product. And would be a shame if this is missed.
You know what I'll say? I'll finish off with this. I actually feel like a lot of people within tech are trying too hard. And that's the thing that I think is really upsetting. Mm. They're trying really hard on these presentations, on these pitch decks, in the sales process. And they're thinking, well, I've given them everything. I've told them absolutely everything. And they're not realizing that actually it's that overload of information. Having been someone on the other side of that table, watching that tech person leave the room after a sales pitch and then instantly having other board members look at me and say, what the hell were they talking about? You know, and thinking that tech person's gone out of there going, I've done a really good job here. I've gone in, I've told them everything we're doing, I've explained everything, and then I've left. And the client sat there going, I still don't know what they do. I know less now than before they came in, right? Whereas if you work with somebody like Sebastian, he's going to teach you how to take that message, take the important components of that message, but translate it into a way that that customer or that investor needs to have that information presented. Absolutely. No, I love that. Sebastian, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thanks for your time, Phil. It was an amazing experience.
No, thanks really, really fun. You're most welcome. You're most welcome. So if you have enjoyed this episode, be sure to share it, like it, subscribe, all that kind of good stuff. But more importantly, if you know people within the world of tech and you are listening to this thinking, you know, more people need to hear this, just drop them a link, send them a link to the show, let them have a listen. And when you come and message us in the comments, be sure to let us know what platform you enjoyed this content on. So we'll see you next time. If that's what you want, making money while you in your box of shorts, feel like nothing and nobody is stopping you. Even when I said it was impossible, no need for hesitation. Feel P, yeah, that's your man. Go from the best kept secret to the go-to brand. Let's go.